Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NOVAM Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around. Either I'll make you laugh or just piss you off so thoroughly you'll send me an email that says, I'm never listening to your crappy, stupid, liberal program again. Either way, it's okay with me. Our goal is to entertain you and make you feel good about living in America. That's our only goal. How much did it fall today? 678 points? Oh, by the way, welcome to KNUV AM in Phoenix, Arizona, another Phoenix station that is carrying Nova M programming, including this program. So to those of you who are listening on 1190 as well as 1480 KPHX, hi. Hello. Welcome to the Nova M family. One of the things that's very irritating to me is the equivalency that mainstream media gives to these two campaigns. In other words, they never talk about how about 95% of John McCain's ads are negative, nasty, lying, filthy attacks on his Democratic opponent. And at the same time, maybe a third of Barack Obama's are negative insofar as they point out the lies and challenge McCain to be honest. Mainstream media treats those two separate situations as equivalent. When they say things like, well, you know, the campaign's really getting uglier, isn't it, huh? Both these candidates are attacking each other. That is a goddamn lie. Yeah, for you folks listening on KNUV, I sometimes use that word. I also use the word son of a bitch and a few more choice epithets. So if you're offended by the kind of talk you hear in any bar, any gas station, on the street corner, I don't give the finger. I mean, you do that in the privacy of your own car when somebody moves in front of you at the gas station line. But anyway, you will hear an occasional goddamn, an occasional son of a bitch. Don't freak out. Okay? Okay. Mainstream media treats this whole campaign as though there were equivalency. John McCain and his hoe from Wasilla, Alaska, are nothing but a couple of absolute, utter destroyers. Obama and Biden, at least, are trying to give the American public some truth, some facts, as they perceive it. Now, I'm not going to get into a riff about, gee, I'm a liberal. Gee, I wish I had a candidate running. You know, somebody could call me up or send me an email and say, well, Malloy, you do have a candidate running. His name is Ralph Nader. Yeah, I know. I understand. And I'm not going to vote for him. I'm voting for Barack Obama. And I've stated the reasons why time and time again on the program. But given all of that, Barack Obama and Joe Biden do represent something that Palin and McCain couldn't come close to. Not in a million years. And that is a degree of honesty. I'm not saying that Barack Obama is the Prince of Peace. I'm not saying that Joe Biden is an honorable senator. I'm saying that they are offering these two candidates honesty. Whereas McCain and Palin are scum. Scum. They're the kind of stuff you scrape off the bottom of your shoe after you've walked through a filthy alley after a nasty rainstorm. And you come out on the street and you go, oh, God, what's that? Scrape, scrape, scrape. And you try to... That's Palin. McCain. McCain's a sellout, as well as being a coward and a liar. Complete sellout. This son of a bitch would deep six his own grandmother if it guaranteed him, if he could make a pact with some evil demon out of the bowels of Sarah Palin's hell, that he, McCain, would get the presidency, if only he would blood sacrifice his grandmother, assuming the old lady was still alive, which I'm sure she's not, he would do it in a heartbeat. He'd lay her on the altar. Slice her neck open, raise her still beating hard up to the Aztec gods and say, thank you!
Ooh.
I got an email here from Donna in LeClaire, Iowa. Donna, I don't know why in the hell you're sending this to me, but I'll read it anyway because it's addressed to me. Subject line says they're going to get Obama killed. And Donna writes, I watched some of the scary videos today of Palin whipping up her crowds into a frenzy. All the hate coming out of the crowds. People calling Obama a terrorist. I also watched the commercials that McCain is running about Ayers and Resco. Please, I hope you would do the right thing and try to stop the McCain camp from running these over-the-top hate ads. The media let us down before, during the Iraq War. Please step up and stop this horrible hate speech coming out of the McCain-Palin campaign. It's going to get Obama killed. Please don't let that happen when you have the power to do the right thing. This is crazy. I'm fearful we're going to live through another John and Robert Kennedy assassination. Sincerely, Donna, and her last name, and her town, Iowa. Donna, I do a radio program, okay? I have as much power on the McCain camp as you do. I'm sorry. That's, you know, when you say step up and stop this horrible hate speech coming out of the McCain-Palin. No, I have, truly, Donna, I'm glad you wrote, but I have a different tactic. I don't care what McCain-Palin says or say or whatever. It's up to Obama and the Secret Service to protect him. If they don't protect him, well, okay, you know what's going to happen. But my only recourse is to call these sons of bitches, sons of bitches. It's to get on this radio program every single night and try to strip the flesh off of the hoe from Wasilla and her pimp, John McCain, to do my little 2 cents worth to expose these ghouls for what they are. But as far as stopping anything coming out of the McCain-Palin dumpster, I have no power to do that. And in fact, neither does anybody. Tom Brokaw. Oh, wait, never mind. Who took his place? Brian Williams has no power to do that. Charlie has no problem to do that. I mean, no power to do that. Jesus, I'm losing it. We're only 14 minutes into the program. Nobody in media has the power to stop McCain or Palin from whipping up this crowd of blank-eyed pod people from screaming about the Negro running the camera to Barack Obama being a terrorist. There's no way you can say, this is America. This is the United States, Donna. We are chock-a-block, coast-to-coast, border-to-border. After 25 years, Ronald Reagan made hatred fashionable again. After all the years, people struggled. Jesus Christ, we have to get over this. And Reagan comes in, kicks off his campaign in Philadelphia, goddamn Mississippi. Do you know where that is, Donna? Do you know what happened there? And Ronald Reagan goes down there and stands almost literally on the corpses of the 3 young civil rights workers, 2 white Jews and 1 black Baptist, I guess, that were butchered by people like Sheriff, goddamn, I'll chew my red man tobacco rainy and sit here in the courthouse. got me a darkie and a couple of Jews. Damn. And get acquitted, too. That's where Ronald Reagan kicked off his campaign, Donna. So for the past 28 years, this country has been fed a steady diet of anti-Semitism, anti-African-Americanism, anti-immigrantism, anti-homosexualism, anti-everything. Okay? You know why? Because white people are going down. White people are starting to lose their exalted position. Sarah Palin and John McCain know this, and they play to it. And the people that support them are cowardly, sneaky, night-riding, hood-wearing sons of bitches who don't have the courage, like McCain doesn't have the courage, to step up to Barack Obama and get in his face. He had an hour and a half to do it the other night. He'll have an hour and a half coming up next week. And get in his face and say, my friend, Barack Obama, why did you hang out with a terrorist? McCain doesn't do that. Palin doesn't do that. Their supporters don't do that. They are cowardly lumps of cow dung.
Who will save your soul? we've got to see trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
Thus saith the Ho from Wasilla. Again, big welcome. Welcome to KNUV in Phoenix. 1190 on the radio dial. Another affiliate in the Nova M family. How about for you folks who are listening via the internet, how come you have not lobbied your local AM talk station to put Nova M programming on your station? Huh? That's your project. God knows you're going to have a lot of time since most of us are going to be out of work for a long time. Let's not even go there. Not yet. We'll get there later. Cindy McCain. I've just about had a belly full of her. John is now he's pimping his own old lady. Of course, he tried to pimp her at the motorcycle rally, the Rolling Thunder thing, where he wanted her to enter a topless contest or whatever the hell it was. What is it about McCain that he has? Come on, Malloy, don't even ask the question. You know the answer. He has so little respect for women that he pimps them. John McCain sees himself as a player? McCain? This old fart? Huh? This walking Viagra ad? He got a couple of them now, doesn't he? Huh? Got the blonde and the brunette out there doing tricks for him. During a recent interview with Marie Claire. Is that a magazine? Oh, it is? Okay. Senator John McCain's wife, Cindy, suggested that her husband has never had PTSD symptoms because he was trained. Her words, quote, he was trained. She also added that symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, such as cold sweats in the middle of the night, her words, are reserved for the, quote, 18-year-olds who were drafted. End quote. The question put to her by the interviewer for Marie Claire said, you met your husband after his POW days. To what extent is that still with you, or is it part of history? Cindy, my husband would be the first one to tell you that that's in the past. Certainly, it's a part of who he is, but he doesn't dwell on it. It's not part of a daily experience that we experience or anything like that, but it has shaped him. It has made him the leader that he is. Question. But no cold sweats in the middle of the night? Answer. Oh, no, 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 no. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. My husband, he'd be the first one to tell you that he was trained to do what he was doing. The guys who had the trouble were the 18-year-olds who were drafted. He was trained. He went to the Naval Academy. He was trained up as a United States Naval officer, and so he knew what he was doing. Trained as a naval officer. Okay, I guess you can make that argument. Although he graduated fifth from the bottom of his class, he was 884th out of the class of 889. Hey, way to go, John, you goofball. Just like George Bush, except your old man was an admiral, so you had to go, right? But you struck back at those dirty goddamn Vietnamese slope civilians, didn't you, huh? Boy, you got a lot of women and children on them bombing runs, didn't you, huh? But that Bill Ayers, Jesus God, how many people did he kill, John? Cindy McCain somehow is stealing pills again. And she's eating fistfuls of them. It's obvious with what she's saying. During an interview with ABC's Charlie Gibson, last Wednesday night? Yesterday, what the hell, Wednesday, last night, Barack Obama accused John McCain of scoring, quote, cheap political points, end quote, with the personal attacks he had leveled at him in recent days. Speaking of the previous night's presidential debate, Obama said he was surprised McCain didn't attempt to repeat these attacks during their time on stage together. Obama, quote, well, I am surprised that, you know, we've been seeing some pretty over-the-top attacks coming out of the McCain campaign over the last several days that he wasn't willing to say it to my face, end quote. Now, today, Joe Biden was in Missouri and echoed that sentiment by Barack Obama. Biden said, quote, all the things they said about Barack Obama on the TV at the rallies, and, you know, now on YouTube, John McCain could not bring himself to look Barack Obama in the eye and say the same thing to him. You know, in my neighborhood, when you got something to say to a guy, you look him in the eye and you say it to him. Well, that's in your neighborhood, Joe. John McCain lives with his snake-eyed old lady and his running mate, Ho, in some strange, I don't know, sparkly dimensional world where you make accusations on the TV and the YouTube and the internets, but when the guy is standing right across from you and he could probably in a knockdown dragout could, you know, screw up your arm or your legs as bad as your arms are, you don't say nothing. You just sit there and go, my friends. Well, my friends, you know, this one over here, my friends, you know, when John McCain the other day talked about my fellow prisoners, hey, Cindy, if that's not a PTSD flashback, what do you call it, sweetheart? Huh? Stay away from the pills, Cindy. They're not yours.
Our leaders, our national leaders, are sending them out on a task that is from God. Bless them with your prayers.
I don't want to bum you out, but BBC is reporting that the Asian markets that are open now have opened down heavily. Tokyo's Nikkei 225 index has dropped 11% this morning, their time. South Korea, Australia, and Singapore crashed 7% in early trading. Dow Jones Industrial, which is the U.S. benchmark index, that fell 7.3% today. So it's already, the Friday markets have opened, and there are reports, International Herald Tribune, BBC, Bloomberg. So tomorrow is going to be one of those Fridays, I'm afraid. Vince in Norfolk, Virginia, wrote in, Mike, McCain's misspoken reference to citizens as prisoners yesterday. Do you still have that, Kathy? You still have that around? See if you can find it. Had no basis for its substitution. He was not speaking at a prison. He was not addressing crime. In fact, the only thing I can compare it to is his stay in a POW camp. It's been said that McCain made several tapes played over the PA system while imprisoned, addressing his fellow prisoners and denouncing the American people and government. This seems to me that he suffered a flashback. Dictionary.com explains flashback to be this: hallucination, a spontaneous recurrence of visual hallucination or other effects of a drug, as LSD, long after the use of the drug has been discontinued. That's A. B. Recurrent and abnormally vivid recollection of a traumatic experience, as a battle, sometimes accompanied by hallucinations. What's your take, Vince, Norfolk? I think John McCain suffers from severe PTSD, as would anyone who had spent his military career preparing to kill people and then going out to kill people. You know, let's get real here for just a minute. I don't think, I've never been in a combat situation. I would have refused to go, except if it would have been a situation where my country's attacked. I'll be a son of a bitch if at any time in my time on this planet I would have volunteered to go into a military of any country whose sole function was to protect the interests of corporate America. No. Ain't gonna happen. Now, a lot of people much wiser than I would say, well, that's all World War II is about, Mike. Well, maybe, maybe not. But never having been in a combat situation, I can only go by what I've read, what I've heard from people who have been in combat situations. And the bottom line is no one who is in a combat situation escapes totally unscathed where it concerns PTSD. It's impossible. Unless you go in as completely amoral, completely without conscience, completely able to shut down totally every single human response that has taken millions of years to evolve. Right? I mean, now, I don't know. Like I say, I qualified it by saying, I don't know. But that's what I've heard. And I tend to believe that. For John McCain, someone who flew 23 missions over Vietnam, North Vietnam, was eventually shot down over Hanoi after killing no one knows how many civilians, but there's enough evidence to suggest that McCain was responsible for dozens, hundreds, perhaps thousands of dead North Vietnamese civilians whose only crime was that they wanted their goddamn independence. And we said, no, 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 no. No, 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 no. No, no, no. And so, the government of a Republican and a Democrat in this country saw fit to order the execution of nearly 60,000 Americans, the wounding of over a quarter million, half a million Americans, and the wholesale butchery of 2 to 3 million Indochinese. John McCain was one of the casualties of the murder we committed in Vietnam. He was a casualty several times over. First of all, being suckered into and taking part in the commission of war crimes against a people who had done nothing to us whatsoever. Goddamn ever. Nothing. Nothing. As a matter of fact, in our fight against the Japanese, the Vietnamese had been our allies. But McCain saw fit to participate in a war crime, a massive war crime. The overarching Vietnam War to begin with. Secondly, to commit individual acts of hideous murder against civilians who had done nothing. And then third, when the invisible whip snapped the son of a bitch and brought him down, and the Vietnamese got him and put him in prison for 5.5 years. All of that taken together, and for snake-eyed Cindy to come out and in her addled way say, well, John was trained. He was from the Naval Academy. The only people that suffered PTSD are the 19-year-olds who were drafted. Of the 18-year-olds who were drafted. Jesus God. This whole Republican Party is nothing but a clutch. Have you noticed this? Of just absolute insane people. All of them. The ones that hold office are the zits that pop up on the skin of this party. Underneath is the poison and the toxic garbage that's floating underneath the skin. And you see that poison every time you look at a McCain-Palin rally. There they are. Pus. Sitting there. And then the pimples pop up. Barbara Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush. George Bush. John McCain. Sarah Palin. Cindy McCain. Cindy McCain has accused Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama of running, quote, the dirtiest campaign in American history, end quote. In remarks reported Tuesday, right before the debate, Remarks reported Tuesday by the Tennessean newspaper. She said she initially did not want her husband to seek the Republican presidential nomination after a brutal primary struggle in 2000 against George W. Bush. She said, quote, "The days of Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill are what we need to look to. A divided government, but a government that needs to agree to disagree," Cindy told reporters after visiting children in a Nashville hospital prior to the presidential debate. Quote, "What we're now seeing polarizing factions, people politicizing things that should be about what's best for America, and instead they're doing what's best for themselves," end quote. Cindy, leave the goddamn pills alone! The only person doing this, or the people doing it, are you scum-sucking, drunk-ass, pill-popping, whorish Republicans. You're the ones doing this. Look at your husband's ads. Listen to the hoe from Wasilla. The Obama campaign declined to comment. In 2000, John McCain lost the Republican primary in South Carolina to George W. Bush, due in large part to insinuations that he fathered an illegitimate child. The couple adopted one daughter, Bridget, from Mother Teresa's orphanage in Bangladesh. Cindy's comments came as the McCain campaign's tone has become increasingly harsh. Nearly every TV ad McCain ran last week was negative, according to an analysis by the Wisconsin Advertising Project released on Wednesday. That compares to 34% of those by Obama. As I mentioned earlier, the ones that they include in this to say that are negative, son of a bitch, it's Obama pointing out the lies in the McCain ad and pointing out what McCain has done in his 26 years as a senator. But that's considered by mainstream media to be equivalent.
Well, it's negative.
It's truthful. Also on Wednesday, Cindy McCain criticized Obama for voting against a bill to pay for the troops in Iraq, even though her husband has done the same thing. She told the Pennsylvania crowd before introducing John and Sarah, quote, "The day that Senator Obama cast a vote not to fund my son when he was serving sent a cold chill through my body, let me tell you, blah, 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 blah. In fact, Obama consistently voted for Iraq troop financing." That's one of the reasons I don't like him. "Except on one occasion, in May 2007, he voted against a troop funding bill because it did not also specify steps for a withdrawal. And McCain has voted to withhold money for the troops. On one troop funding bill supported by Obama, McCain missed the vote and encouraged Bush to veto it because it did call for withdrawal." Cindy, get away from the pills.
Has great destiny. You guys are all a bunch of cool-looking Christians also. I just want to bless you.
Especially when you're naked. I just want to bless you. Come here. Come here, you little snot. Let me bless you. Sick. 10 before the hour. All right, we got the McCain soundbite from the other night. We just want to play it one more time. This is a clear example of PTSD at work. Before we play it, Irish Dave sent this in. "Mike, an experienced Army doc once was asked what the casualty rate would be after 90 days in a combat zone. He said pretty much 100%, physical, mental, or emotional, except the few that like it," vis-a-vis Cindy Snake Eyes comments. She doesn't seem to understand that training for distant, detached killing fails in the long run since it was him or me rationalization is not available. Did you get that? She doesn't seem to understand that training for distant, detached killing, that training fails in the long run since the old fight-or-flight instinct rationalization is not available. Irish Dave. Here's an example of PTSD at work in front of a crowd of hundreds.
You and I together will confront the $10 trillion debt that the federal government has run up and balance the federal budget by the end of my term in office. Across this country, this is the agenda I have set before my fellow prisoners, and the same standards of clarity and candor must now be applied.
Yeah, okay. My fellow prisoners, sign your confessions. The North Vietnamese are good people. We never should have come here to bomb, murder, and kill them anyway. Sign the confessions, my fellow prisoners. Sign them, and they will increase our rice ration. Sign them, my fellow prisoners. Lauren writes from Edmonton, Canada. Is it from Edmonton? I think so, yeah. Regarding Vietnam being a war crime, Mike, Afghanistan and Iraq are also war crimes, crimes against humanity, and with both our countries having all-volunteer armies, I still consider, despite years of propaganda and yellow ribbons on every SUV, that these soldiers are murderers. The local rock stations and other groups here want some street near our city's armed forces base to be renamed Boulevard of Heroes. And anyone who doesn't get behind this idiotic tribute to soldiers is instantly branded a traitor. We don't understand how brave these heroes are for going to Afghanistan to kill people who have never threatened Canada, risking their lives in the process. She's saying that ironically. Think of how their families feel, for heaven's sake. More irony. How can I not honor our brave troops by signing the petition to rename a street a vague storybook name, Boulevard of Heroes? After all, here in Edmonton, the powers that be renamed a huge thoroughfare Wayne Gretzky Drive. Oh, there's more here, but let me end on the chuckle, Lauren. Yeah, I agree. I cannot call someone who commits a war crime a hero. I can't do it. You know, I feel very sorry for the families that contribute the sons and daughters, mostly sons. I feel sorry for the brainwashing, or I feel sorry for the people who experience the brainwashing when they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. You know, guys who think, they've got one this long and they've got to go prove it by going through Marine combat training or whatever it is, or Army combat training, so they can go kill people. Now, I'm sorry. As long as the human species contains that particular genetic aspect, to be manipulated that way, when no one is attacking you, no one is coming into your village, no one's coming into your cave, no one's landing on your shores, no one is showing up to rape, loot, and pillage your town or your. But you are told and convinced and trained for distant, detached killing. That's not a hero. That's a chump. That's a killer. That's a murderer. That's a war criminal. That's a thug. That's a part of the gene pool that should be somehow eliminated. You know it as well as I do. Don't give me this goddamn flag-waving nasty stuff about, oh, Mike, come on! You're against the military? I am against war criminals. I don't care if the crimes are committed by military, civilian, spooks, haints, shades, people that go bump in the night. I don't care. A war criminal is a war criminal. Where do I get that from? From the Nuremberg trials. From reading what was said. These are crimes against humanity. And we hanged people for those crimes. And so when our people do it, we're supposed to put yellow goddamn ribbons on our cars and say, oh, these are war heroes. No, they're not. And as far as McCain, one of the most cowardly acts that can be committed, as far as I'm concerned, in an act of war or aggression or invasion or war crime, the most criminal act is to fly 35, 40,000, 25 to 30,000 feet above a city and unleash your cargo of fire and hell and turn civilians into little puddles of melted flesh, whether they're children, old people, men, women, teenagers, it doesn't matter. That is not the act of a hero. That is the act of an insane, sick, murderous beast. We'll be back after the break, maybe. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. Thank you for hanging around, or if you're just joining us, well, you missed the last hour. Is probably the best hour in talk radio that I've ever done, but no, just kidding. It's just the usual Malloy ranting and screaming. Are you starting to understand what's going on where it concerns the economies of this country? And apparently a bunch of other ones around the globe. The apparent complete meltdown of what has been happening for the past 20, 25 years, maybe a little bit longer. I'm still trying to get work it into my brain. This is one of the subjects that I, like you, I'm sure, never spend a lot of time on. You know, it's not like international relations that we kind of have to know about, not like environmental issues that we kind of have to know about, not like, whatever our specialty fields are, if you're a nurse or if you're whatever, you focus in and learn your stuff, if you're a radio talk show host, yada, yada, if you're a journalist. But economics, we were always taught by the ruling class that it was way beyond our ability to understand. And apparently for a very good reason, because if we would have understood it from the get-go, we never would have let this happen. Here's what's happened, as far as I'm concerned. This meltdown, this coming apart, what did I hear today? That General Motors stock is selling for under $5 a share? $4.70 a share? Wow. Who was it? Charles Wilson, Secretary of Defense during the Eisenhower administration? Who said, I'm paraphrasing, what's good for General Motors is good for the United States. Talk about a prescient statement. But what we're seeing here is the failure of the system. You know, I've been talking about this for a while, as a couple of years, 3 years, as I've tried to get a handle on understanding this stuff. Because like you, in economics class in high school, I certainly didn't take it on university level. You know, I do the homework assignments, turn them in, get my B, and be done with it. Didn't pay any attention to it at all. You know, not at all. Huh? And, economics? Oh, yeah. Well, now the truth is, when you learn about capitalist economics, what you're learning, everything you're learning, is a lie. It's a lie because it is not infinite. It can't keep going on. Eventually, and this is what the Communist Manifesto, or not the Communist Manifesto, but this is what some of Karl Marx's essays were about when he was living in a Coldwater flat in London. Eventually, it collapses. It has to. The capitalist model cannot go on forever. Now, if it's run on the basis that it's been run for the past, say, 50 years, then the acceleration to the brick wall becomes ever more intense until we run into the situation we're in right now. This system, what we are seeing, is the way it has failed those of us who have worked within it. All of our lives, this entire country. We didn't start out as a capitalist of society, obviously. But in the middle of the 19th century, all of a sudden, boom. Well, here we are. This bailout idea, and now there's some semantic arguments going on. Well, the reason nobody supports this is because it's called a bailout. Why don't we call it restructuring? Bat's not. This bailout is the final payoff by the Bush crime family to the people who have assisted in the bankruptcy of this country and the global financial system. It's all collapsing. Now, that doesn't mean we're all going to die. It just means that this system is collapsing. And I wonder if it's possible, and I know the answer to the question now. The answer is no. I wonder if it's possible to replace the corruption that is this kind of capitalism with a form of democratic socialism. I wonder if that's possible. Right, I've already answered the question. No. And the main reason is because we have had a, 150-year-long, not quite that, brainwashing that the word socialism bears and wolves, oh, monsters, vampires, run, hide, get the kids off the street, socialism, and it's for that reason that the idea of democratic socialism, I'm not talking about the model that was applied in Soviet Russia, Soviet Union, that's not socialism. I'm not talking about what was applied in China, that's not socialism, or it wasn't socialism. Both those nations now have the kind of predatory capitalism that's collapsing just like this one is. What did I read today? The Russians are trying to borrow money to shore up, they can't even borrow money to shore up their own stock market. Wait a minute, I thought Russia was, you know, flush. Up until about 3 weeks ago, they were. Look, folks, hey, come here, let me tell you something. Come here. Capitalism is about capital. That's why they call it capitalism. It's not about people. It is anti-family. It is pro-war. It is pro-death. It is anti-peace. It is anti-love. It is anti-creative. It's anti-art. It's anti-environmental. Capitalism has one function, one goal, and only one. To expand capital. And only for the ruling class. That's all. It hasn't worked. Here we are. It's happening. Well, all of us are still alive to see it. What we are seeing, and I don't know how long this death is going to take, but it's dying. Do you not understand that? Well, I didn't either, but now I'm beginning to understand it. Capitalism, the American model, the global model, sometimes referred to as neoliberalism, is dying. Now, the humane thing to do would be to go ahead, give it some hospice care, increase the morphine, just pump it in, and kill the son of a bitch as quickly as possible. Don't give it $1.2 trillion cash infusion. Don't print more money. Don't do bailouts. Let the son of a bitch die! And replace it with something that is not antithetical to life. Never mind. Those people who understand that kind of a rant were there a long time before I ever was. So, and the people don't understand it, just sitting there staring stupidly at the radios. Jesus Christ, Nova M has a communist on the air. Oh, man. From Andrea in Colorado. Mike, I'm totally bummed out over this economy mess. It's bad and it's getting worse. This morning on Tom Hartman, he interviewed an economist. In the end, when he asked about her forecast for the future, she said, "I'm optimistic." And all I could think of was Anne Frank saying, "In spite of everything, I still believe that people are really dear at heart." About 10 minutes before the Nazis smashed the bookcase and took them all away. Yeah. I can understand the idea of being optimistic about the survival, the financial survival of the human species. Of course, what we're witnessing, if we open our eyes and just witness it and speed it along, or do nothing, adopt the Buddhist model, just do nothing. Let the goddamn thing die. Let it die. What has it done, capitalism? What has it done? Starting in this country with the Civil War, how many millions of people have died for this putrid, stinking corpse of an economic system? How many? How many? Let it die! Let it die!
Your host for a Pian's Brian's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Abby in Maine writes, regarding McCain's PTSD, Abby writes, "McCain must have been practicing his speeches in front of a mental image of his fellow prisoners. He lied to them, and he knows he is now lying to his fellow Americans. So it would be only natural that his subconscious would make the connection, and it would slip out of his mouth. My fellow prisoners." Yet another reason to vote for Barack Hussein Obama instead of John who's insane McCain. Oh, that's cool. Barack Hussein Obama. Abby in Maine. Thanks, Abby. We're going to come to your calls here in a minute. Lee writes, yes, she's a hoe. Mike, I listen to you as much as I can, and tonight I can't stop laughing. Your references to Bush and Palin, the hoe, are right on. And to Dory... Oh, this was from last night. Dory was the woman who wrote to me and was very offended because I used the term ho regarding Palin. And I used Dory's letter in my mini blog at MikeMolloy.com, yada, yada. So Lee is talking about that email. As to Dory, I'm a woman too, but you referred to Palin as a mother, a governor, a wife, and someone's daughter. The same could be said of Obama, who's a father, a senator, a husband, and someone's son. Yet Palin and McCain incite their audiences to refer to him as a terrorist and yell, "Kill him." I don't relate to her as a woman if she engages in these behaviors which verge on criminal. McCain is slowly melting and will self-destruct any day now. On a serious note, if McCain was a real woman, wouldn't she have said, quote, "I'm honored to have been asked to run as Senator McCain's vice president and would welcome the opportunity in the future. But I'll have to decline the position and ask that you pass it on to a more experienced woman than I am at this time. Thank you," end quote. Instead, she's pursuing her or someone's agenda to the detriment of all women. Thank you, Mike, for saying what we, the outraged, feel. I'm glad you're going to vote for Obama. I'm a realist, and I know that anyone who truly works for us and the lesser among us is silenced. But I have to wade through another four. If I have to wade through another 4 years of crap, I'm leaving. Lee, I hear you, Lee. Thanks for emailing.
And she might also say, "And I'm a mother. And I'm a mother of a brand new special needs baby that needs my help and attention. And I'm about to be a grandmother because my 17-year-old daughter's pregnant. And I've got 5 kids, and they're all named after tree bark. And I need to stay home with my family. Thank you."
Well, that's very sexist, Kathy. Why doesn't, never mind. I get your point. I think the experience thing, though, that Lee wrote about, I think that would have been the gracious thing to do. She would have, to hell with it. I like this story. The sheriff in Cook County, Chicago, said that he's going to order his deputies to stop evicting people from foreclosed properties because many people that his officers have to throw out on the street are renters who did nothing wrong. You know, this just may be the first shot fired in the revolution. Do you realize that? Because this sheriff is violating the law. He's in contempt of court. And God bless him for it. Well, you know what I mean when I say God bless him. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart said at a news conference, quote, "We will no longer be a party to something that's so unjust. We have to be sure that when we are doing this and we are destroying people's lives, we better be darn sure we're talking about the right people," end quote. Sheriff Dart said he believes he's the first sheriff in a major metropolitan area to stop participating in foreclosure evictions. And the publisher of a national foreclosure database said he's probably right. Sheriff Dart said that from now on, banks will have to present his office with a court affidavit that proves the home's occupant is either the owner or has been properly notified of the foreclosure proceedings. Illinois law requires that renters be notified that their residence is in foreclosure and that they will be evicted in 120 days. But Sheriff Dart indicated that the law has been routinely ignored. He talked about tenants who dutifully pay their rent, then leave one morning for work, only to have authorities evict them and put their belongings on the curb while they're gone. And by the time they get home, the sheriff said, quote, "The meager possessions they have are gone. This is happening too often," end quote. In many cases, he said, tenants aren't even aware that their homes have fallen into foreclosure. An attorney asked that Sheriff Dart be held in contempt when his deputies did not evict tenants after determining they were not the owners and did not know about the landlord's financial problems. The sheriff said, "Yeah, my job as sheriff is to follow court orders, absolutely, but I'm also in charge of making sure justice is being done here, and it's clear that justice is not being done," end quote. Good for you, Sheriff Dart. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart, who says no, goddammit, no. Make me an offer that I can't refuse. Make me respectable, man. My last time in the uniform, I'm a crime. So like it or not, I'll take the long night, impossible life, keeping my mind to the war.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's about 25 before the hour. Might be an interesting bit of research or even a thought experiment to check out. Go to Wikipedia, go to your friendly neighborhood library, whatever you want to do. Check out the term democratic socialism. Just check it out. That's all. Just check it out. Democratic socialism, okay? Just try it. It won't hurt you. This is some of the stuff is getting a lot of stuff is getting lost. The House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Howard Berman has promised not to bring House Concurrent Resolution 362 before the committee for consideration. Now, no, I don't. I had no idea what it was either. House Resolution 362 was the legislation that would have opened the door for a naval blockade on Iran, an act of absolute war. Now, the fact that the Democrats in Congress have decided to shelve this Iran war resolution is represents, this is how Maya Shenwar puts it at Truth Out, it represents a forceful effort by members of Congress, prodded by grassroots groups, to turn back the tides of impending war. Trita Parsi, president of the National Iranian American Council, told Truth Out, quote, "The game changer occurred when lawmakers realized that the resolution would lead to a naval blockade and war. The mood in Congress is similar to what it is in the country as a whole. The appetite for another war in the Middle East simply isn't there," end quote. The Iran resolution, if you remember, that was originally proposed back in May, would have imposed, quote, "stringent inspection requirements," end quote, on trade with Iran, making a military blockade and the legal use of force distinct possibilities. It gained bipartisan support even among some of Congress's most progressive members, such as impeachment advocate Robert Wexler, Oversight Committee Chairman and vocal Bush critic Henry Waxman. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, rated the most liberal Democrat in Congress by the nonpartisan vote tracking project GovTrack. Yeah, see, when McCain tells you it's Barack Obama in Congress, unless McCain says in the Senate, but I think he says in Congress, which is the generic term that means both houses. It's really Jan Schakowsky. But Schakowsky, Wexler, and Waxman all supported this. Intense lobbying efforts by AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, propelled the bill forward, and in late June, sources close to congressional leadership expected it to be ushered into the House, onto the House floor, under suspension of the rules. A place on the suspension schedule, which is usually reserved for uncontroversial legislation, would have meant very limited debate and a quick vote. AIPAC framed the bill as a necessary escalation of tactics toward Iran. In a statement on the legislation, AIPAC announced, quote, "Iran poses a growing threat to the United States and our allies, as it continues rapidly advancing toward a nuclear weapons capability. Sanctions are having an impact on Iran, but more needs to be done now to persuade Tehran to change course," end quote. I'll have a link to this article, and you can read the whole thing. Sponsors of 362, Congressman Gary Ackerman and Congressman Mike Pence, responded to the accusations of activists and experts in a letter to their colleagues stating, quote, "These assertions are absolutely false and frankly utter nonsense. the assertions being that, this is just a resolution to, this is a resolution to bring us another war. So the Democrats in Congress, in the House, have put this on hold. Now, it doesn't mean it's killed. It means it's on hold. In the meantime, Army General David Petraeus, head of CENTCOM now, said yesterday that negotiations with the Taliban could provide a way to reduce violence in sections of Afghanistan gripped by an intensifying insurgency. Petraeus, who will soon take up responsibility for U.S. operations in Afghanistan, said, quote, "If there are people who are willing to reconcile with the government, then that would be a positive step in some of these areas that have actually been spiraling downward. The key there," he said, "is making sure that all of that is done in complete coordination with complete support of the Afghan government." So, General David Petraeus, somebody ought to clue McCain in. Petraeus is willing to negotiate with terrorists. Let me say that again. General David Petraeus, soon to be the head of CENTCOM, I believe, the supreme allied commander, kind of, sort of, not quite like Eisenhower, but damn near, and going to be certainly the supreme commander in Afghanistan, is suggesting that we sit down and negotiate with terrorists. That we sit down and negotiate with terrorists. Now, this crazed son of a bitch McCain keeps saying in these phony-ass little debates that he believes that General David Petraeus, you know, the man who made the surge work, which is not what happened. If you are sane and can understand what really happened there, thanks to the Shia militia man, Sadr, who ordered his people, his 100,000-man army, to stand down. But anyway, I digress. Petraeus is saying it's time to negotiate with terrorists. It's time to negotiate with people who wantonly kill American soldiers. It is time to negotiate with the people who, whether they are right or wrong, and I frankly think they are crazed sons of bitches because they are religious fanatics, just like the hoe from Wasilla. Whether they're right or wrong, religious fanatics or not, it's their goddamn country, and we are the invader. So General David Petraeus is suggesting that we sit down and negotiate with terrorists. Hey, McCain, are you listening? David Petraeus is suggesting we negotiate with terrorists. What are you going to say in your debate with Barack Obama, Hussein, next Wednesday? What are you going to say, Lumpy? How about that? Negotiate with terrorists. Gee. David, you really think that is course of action? That what's going to happen to all those yellow ribbons on all those SUVs back here in the States? Oh, there's so much more here. Jesus. I do want to do an Uncle Mike story corner tonight, too, so we will let that wait until next hour. You've probably heard this now. It's all over mainstream media. Despite pledges by Bush and American intelligence officials to the contrary, hundreds of U.S. citizens overseas were eavesdropped on as they called friends and family back home, according to two former military intercept operators who worked at the giant NSA center right here in Georgia. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the traitorous coward Jay Rockefeller, Democrat of West Virginia, called the allegations, quote, extremely disturbing, end quote, and said the committee has begun its own examination. That means Jay Rockefeller's committee has begun its cover-up of the truth. Jay Rockefeller, remember, it was his committee that recommended that immunity be given to the telecom companies who participated in this criminal act, massive act of criminality against the American people. We just keep getting it left and right, don't we, huh? They smack us in the jaw and our head flips back, and they punch us in the belly and our head flips forward, and they smack us in the jaw and our head flips back, and they punch us in the belly and we fall, right? It just keeps going on and on and on. Rockefeller said today, we have requested all relevant information from the Bush. Oh, stop. The committee will take whatever action is necessary. Oh, shut up, Rockefeller. Now, apparently, the way I get the story from ABC and a few other sources, these creepy sons of bitches who have been spying on Americans now since 2001 would sit there and listen to intimate phone calls, phone sex, you might call it, between husbands and wives, boyfriends and girlfriends, sweethearts who were on two different continents. And they would listen in and giggle and hoot and play with themselves the way these spying little NSA bastards are wont to do. So everything that we were told was a lie by the government and the military and the NSA, and everything that we were told by the civil libertarians turns out once again to be the truth. For Christ's sake, look up the term democratic socialism and find out what it's about.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
A little bit more on this phone sex story, the National Security Agency. Adrian Kinney, 31-year-old U.S. Army Reserve Arab linguist, assigned to a special military program at the National Security Agency's back hall at Fort Gordon here in Georgia from November 2001 to 2003. She said, quote, "These were just really average, everyday, ordinary Americans who happened to be in the Middle East in our area of intercept and happened to be making these phone calls on satellite phones." End quote. Kenny described the contents of the calls as, quote, "personal, private things with Americans who are not in any way, shape, or form associated with anything to do with terrorism," end quote. She said U.S. military officers, American journalists, and American aid workers were routinely intercepted and, quote, "collected on," end quote, as they called their offices or homes in the United States. Another intercept operator, former Navy Arab linguist David Falk, said he and his fellow intercept operators listened into hundreds of Americans picked up using phones in Baghdad's Green Zone from 2003 to November 2007. Falk said, quote, "calling home to the United States, talking to their spouses, sometimes their girlfriends, sometimes one phone call following another," end quote. The accounts of the two former intercept operators who have never met and did not know of the other's allegations provide the first inside look at the day-to-day operations of the huge and controversial U.S. terrorist surveillance program. President Bush, at a news conference this past February, said, quote, "there is a constant check to make sure that our civil liberties of our citizens are treated with respect," end quote. The accounts of the two whistleblowers raise serious questions about how much respect is accorded those Americans whose conversations are intercepted in the name of fighting terrorism. Falk says he and others in his section of the NSA facility at Fort Gordon routinely shared salacious or tantalizing phone calls they had intercepted, alerting office mates to certain time codes of certain cuts that were available on each operator's computer. Falk says he would be told, "hey, check this out. There's good phone sex. Or there's some pillow talk. Put up this call. It's really funny. Go check it out." It would be some colonel making pillow talk, and we would say, "wow, this is crazy," Falk told ABC News. Fox said he joined in to listen and talk about it during breaks in Bacall's smoke pit. But he ended up feeling badly about his actions. He said, quote, "I feel that it was something that the people should not have done, including me," end quote. In testimony before Congress, then NSA Director General Michael Hayden, now Director of the CIA, said private conversations of Americans are not intercepted, goddammit! I'm a general! You believe me? General Hayden testified, "It's not for the heck of it. We are narrowly focused and drilled on protecting the nation against Al-Qaeda and those organizations who are affiliated with it," end quote. We don't listen in on people's conversations. He was asked by Senator Orrin Hatch during those hearings, quote, "Are you just doing this because you want to pry into people's lives?" end quote. Answer, General Hayden, "No, sir." Asked for comment about the ABC News report and accounts of intimate and private phone calls and military officers being passed around, a U.S. intelligence official said, "All employees of the U.S. government should expect that their telephone conversations could be monitored as part of an effort to safeguard security and information assurance." Jonathan Turley, a constitutional law professor at George Washington University, who has testified before Congress on this program, said, quote, "They certainly didn't consent to having interceptions of their telephone sex conversations being passed around like some type of fraternity game," end quote. Turley added, quote, "This story is to surveillance law what Abu Ghraib was to prison law," end quote. Now, Specialist Adrian Kinney, the National Security Agency awarded her a Joint Service Achievement Medal in 2003. At the same time, she says she was listening to hundreds of private conversations between Americans, including many from the International Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders. Kinney told ABC News, quote, "We knew that they were working for these aid organizations. They are identified in our system as belongs to the International Red Cross and all these other organizations. And yet, instead of blocking these phone numbers, we continued to collect on them," end quote. A spokesman for Doctors Without Borders, Michael Goldfarb, said, quote, "The abuse of humanitarian action through intelligence gathering for military or political objectives threatens the ability to assist populations and undermines the safety of humanitarian aid workers," end quote. Jesus Christ. Both Kinney and Falk said their commanders rebuffed their questions about listening into the private conversations of Americans talking to Americans. Kinney said, quote, "It was always just, you know, your job is not to question. Your job is to collect and pass on the information," end quote. A spokesman for General Hayden said, quote, "At NSA, the law was followed assiduously. The notion that General Hayden sanctioned or tolerated illegalities of any sort is ridiculous on its face," end quote. The director of the NSA, Lieutenant General Keith Alexander, declined to directly answer any of the allegations made by the whistleblowers, but in a written statement, General Alexander said, quote, "We have been entrusted to protect and defend the nation with integrity, accountability, and respect for the law. As Americans, we take this obligation seriously. Our employees work tirelessly for the good of the nation and serve this country proudly," end quote. It's time for a real change, Senator Obama. Not the kind that I think you're talking about. Unless you're talking in code. And if you are, okay. But isn't it getting closer and closer to the time? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. I was going to say this, but a couple of you have already sent me the emails about this. I'll also be linking at our site tonight, MikeMalloy.com, the original story that ABC is reporting as an exclusive. And the original story about the whistleblowers was reported by David Swanson a year and a half ago at AfterDowningStreet.org. So the story has been out there, and as Swanson writes now, he's got it headlined, ABC Lying About NSA. David writes, on Thursday, ABC News reported a big new break in the story of illegal and unconstitutional spying that our government has engaged in for years, except there was nothing new in the story, and the important parts were left out. The ABC News announcer began the video report thus, quote, this is the first time any of the actual intercept operators, the people who listen and record phone calls on behalf of U.S. intelligence agencies, the first time any of them has come forward, end quote. That is not true. David Swanson was talking about this a year and a half ago, publishing about it. You know, it's understandable that a Disney-owned news organization is not going to talk about things so horribly unpatriotic as criminal actions perpetrated, condoned, and sanctioned by the highest levels of the U.S. military and the President of the United States, and put it on their Disney-owned news channel, especially when it concerns phone sex and intimate conversations and pillow talk. We'll link this, and I want you to take a look at it, both stories. Read the ABC story, and then read David Swanson's original story and his response to what ABC now is saying tonight was an exclusive and the first time and yada yada. I hate mainstream media, don't you? Huh? Don't you just hate them? What else? Oh, there's just so much more. Jesus, God. I know there was something else I wanted to get to, but I can't. Oh, well. Yeah, you know, my mind is like your mind. It's just kind of turning into mush. I keep going back to Bloomberg and International Herald Tribune reading about this meltdown of the Japanese market today, Friday, as this horror rolls our way. They lost 11%, 12% of their value. Also, I've got a link for you that'll be up. I don't think Kathy's put it up yet. It's Wikipedia about democratic socialism. Just take a look at it. Just read about it. And there's all sorts of links in the article. I mean, there's enough reading material there to last you a month. But read about it. Read what that form, and it's you know, sometimes it's called social democracy. It's very difficult to clearly define. Capitalism is easily defined. Communism is easily defined. Fascism is easily defined. Democratic socialism is, well, read about it. What we are experiencing right now is national socialism, nationalist socialism, or corporatism, or fascism. That's what national socialism is. National socialism. Don't be confused by the terms. That's why I'm just asking very respectfully that you read about this. Not you. So many people listening to the program now are just like yawning, going, Malloy, Jesus Christ, we've known about this for 20 years. I understand. But you're in the minority. All right, let's do some phone calls because I do want to. I've got a very kind of cool Uncle Mike Story Corner tonight by our old friend Gene Lyons, who is now a freelance writer in Little Rock, Arkansas. He's an author. He's a recipient of the National Magazine Award and has written for the Arkansas Democrat, which is owned by a bunch of right-wingers. But let's do some Democratic Gazette. I don't know. Sean is calling from Vancouver, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, I feel the need to say a few things out loud just to make sure I have them straight.
Okay.
Number one, we had the five big investment banks, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, get together and bundle or securitize these mortgages and turn them into collateralized debt obligations.
Yes.
Then they take out insurance policies on them called credit default swaps, which
right.
they don't call insurance, because if they call it insurance, then it's regulated.
It has to be regulated then, right?
And it's not a security, because if they call it a security, it'd be regulated by the SEC.
Right. So they make up a term.
Exactly. So we
And Greenspan, Alan Greenspan, the guru of the U.S. Capitalism, has been supporting. He says they're fine. They're great. Keep doing it.
Exactly. Championing structured finance all through this period.
That's right.
And the people who are supposed to be rating these bonds, giving them a grade, so to speak, are the ratings agencies, and they're being paid by the very investment banks that are putting these bonds together.
Right.
And the ratings agencies rate these garbage bonds AAA.
Right.
And so these garbage bonds then get spread throughout the world through banks and institutions all around the world, thereby poisoning the entire global financial system.
I hope everybody's listening to you, because you are doing what most people can't do, even the commentators. You're putting it very succinctly, and that's exactly what has happened. Yeah.
But here's where it gets really crazy, Mike. The head of the Treasury Department is Mr. Hank Paulson, beloved leader himself,
mm-hmm.
former CEO of Goldman Sachs, one of the biggest of the brokerages. And he's now in charge of $700 billion, and he's assigned a 35-year-old former Goldman Sachs employee
right.
to oversee the TARP program,
right.
where they're going to buy up all these toxic bonds from around the world. And he's going to be choosing the price of these bonds. A former investment banker is now in charge of determining what price the American taxpayer is going to pay for these garbage bonds.
And it would be trite and asinine for me to use the phrase like the fox watching the hen house. But this guy you're referring to, this 35-year-old, it was my understanding he's 6 years out of a business school. He followed, what his relationship to Paulson is, but he used to work at Goldman Sachs. When Paulson left, he quit. This 35-year-old, he went to the West Coast, did something in a rating firm or whatever he did out there, still in the same industry. When Paulson got appointed Secretary of the Treasury, this guy called Paulson and asked for a job. Paulson hired him, and now this, dare I say, kid, I realize he's 35, but he's going to be in charge of the most massive distribution of tax funds in one lump like this in the history of what? All humankind? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Except it's a scam.
Fellow truth seekers, can you say conflict of interest?
Oh my God. Even that doesn't even get it. It's just unbelievable. Paulson should, when he appears in public, he should have one of those Lone Ranger masks over his face. The son of a bitch is an absolute thief. He represents everything that is evil, sick, and twisted about predatory capitalism, and everybody's turning to him as if he's the savior.
Mike, they have this term, it's a legal term called clawback. They're talking about, you know, getting back some of the bonuses these guys got paid at AIG and so forth. Now, you know, that's all well and good. We need a clawback of all of these resources. But I'm with you. I think we should have a democratic socialist clawback for 300 years of chattel slavery and wage slavery. You know, the mother of all clawbacks is what we need.
It's
something
time.
Along the lines of Michael Harrington's idea of a clawback. You know what
it's,
I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for holding on as long as you
have
did.
Nice.
And I appreciate your call. It is time, Truth Seeker. It's time.
Not for you. It's a wonderful life. No stress, no strife. Never hurry, never worry like the poor folks do. And oh, am I zipper to be so well.
ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Angelica is calling from Germany, listening on the internet. Is it Angelica or Angelica?
It's Angelica. Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to try to sound especially chipper this 5:20 in the morning.
Thank you. Thanks for holding on.
So I don't know if I'll succeed or not.
All right, here we go.
Okay. First of all, what Sean said, I agree. Those subprime packages, that they bundled up and sold also to German banks, and they just bought them up, and a lot of them just would have gone under, but they had to be bailed out by the billions of. By taxpayers. So just so you know, it's a global thing, and
right. And
that bubble is going to still, the other bubble is going to be consumer credit. $900 billion is out there. I don't see how people are going to be able to pay that back, and then what, you know.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
And one more thing, the G8 last year, I don't know if you heard about it or remember, but it was hosted by the social democratic finance minister then in Germany.
Uh-huh.
And he urged everyone, because he saw what was happening, because there was absolutely no transparency as far as the hedge funds and the financial dealings went. And he urged the Americans and the British, because they were primarily involved in that, to regulate, the system so that there be more transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And they were vehemently against that and says, no, because, they knew farewell. They didn't want to rock that boat because that's what their industry was based on.
Right.
And so they decided not to. And then a year later, look where we are,
Mm-hmm.
And but that's not why I called. Sean just kind of, tipped me onto that. I wanted to, when you say social, democratic socialism,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, is that what you call it in America?
Either that or social democracy.
Right, because that would, it takes the ism out of the social.
Right, right.
That
seems to be the word that scares the bejesus out of Americans. Because, as I said, we've had 150 years of indoctrination that socialism is a bad word. So social democracy, if that is more palatable to the American public, let's call it that.
Oh, definitely. And, I'm a social democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movement that's like 160 years old.
Sure.
The German is the oldest in Europe, oldest social democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically, it's a humanistic movement, and it's based on solidarity, and they want a pluralistic society, and their approach is just that state, the government has, it's their responsibility to see to it.
Right.
This is taking place. And so it's a little bit different from the Scandinavian, where they say, well, their basic purpose is to to the welfare, to
right.
Distribute.
There's a difference between a so-called, and I say so-called, welfare state, and the idea of social democracy or a democratic socialism or social democracy.
Yes.
And not that I feel that a welfare state, so-called, is necessarily bad. The problem I have with the welfare state is that it does seem to stifle creativity.
And exactly.
And I mean creativity not just in terms of inventiveness or entrepreneurship, but also creativity where it concerns the arts. There's something about the welfare state that just, I don't know, lulls people into almost a comatose state. Whereas democratic socialism, if I understand the term properly, and what I've witnessed in my lifetime, is it almost inspires people to creativity, whether it's music or a theater or opera or these wonderful symphonic compositions. It just seems to free people up a little bit, whereas capitalism, the kind practiced in this country, which is rapidly turning into national socialism, does not do that. I mean, you have elements of creativity in this country. There's no doubt. So, I'm not downplaying or minimizing our actors and dancers and playwrights and poets and painters and artists. But there's something negative and ugly underneath all of it that I have found in my travels doesn't necessarily exist in a system of democratic socialism. So to me, there are several layers, reasons, levels to move toward that. It seems like an evolutionary step.
Well, it has in a way, it has a task to target the social unjustness at the roots. That's part of also the program or whatever you want to call it, of social democracy, mm-hmm. And in German companies, they have to have, and that's been, I think, implemented since the 70s, if I recall reading that, that they have members of the social council, the workers' council, mm-hmm. in the business. In the board.
Which only serves the interests of everybody involved. Angelica, I have to leave it there. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling. Take care. We'll talk again.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah. 25 before the hour. All right. We haven't done this for a while, but gather around, kiddies, because it is time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. All snug in your jammies, huh? Well, not Angelica. She's up having coffee. But if you live over here in the good old United States, gather around, snuggle up, grab your teddy bear or your dolly. It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's edition brought to you by Gene Lyons. If the economic situation weren't so grim, it'd be darkly amusing watching conservatives hunting for a scapegoat other than Bush administration true believers. For a generation, devotees of the very bad novelist Ayn Rand have assured us that greed is a virtue and government oversight of financial institutions an impediment to genius. In the so-called ownership society, financial regulations were for panty waists. In GOP think, government exists purely to drop bombs and monitor other people's sex lives. Financial deregulation has been the Republican miracle elixir since Ronald Reagan. Back in March, Senator John McCain reassured the Wall Street Journal that despite being, quote, aware of the view that there is a need for government oversight, end quote, in debacles like the subprime lending crisis, quote, I am fundamentally a deregulator, end quote. In between winks and shout-outs to Joe Sixpack during the vice presidential debate, Sarah Palin also wanted it both ways. She praised John McCain for pushing for even harder and tougher regulations, and then she said patriotism means saying, government, you're not always the solution. In fact, too often you're the problem. So, government, get out of the way and let the private sector and our families grow and thrive and prosper. Meanwhile, naive, otherworldly progressives argued that mortgage lenders needed regulators in the back room for the same reason they need locks on the front door. You'd think that any adult who had ever bought real estate, avoided losing his life savings to Nigerian email scams, or even spent rainy afternoons playing Monopoly as a child would understand this fundamental fact of human nature. If you make it easy for people to steal, they'll steal everything, including the silverware and grandma's dentures. Alas, too many heeded the pie-in-the-sky GOP theology. The miracle-working market absolved us all from sin. Hence, from the Reagan-created savings and loan crisis onward, corporate financial scandals have grown steadily larger and more dangerous, but abandoned dogma? Never. Now comes GOP apologist to identify the real perps of the Wall Street meltdown. Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, feckless black folks, Mexican Americans, and U.S. Representative Barney Frank, who's evidently been covertly running Wall Street all this time. See, while you fretted over Bush screw-ups in Iraq, Afghanistan, and New Orleans, a sinister, dusky cabal built a speculative bubble in ghetto real estate. Overpriced luxury condos were constructed with borrowed money in fashionable Harlem, Watts, and the south side of Chicago, also downtown Atlanta, Newark, St. Louis, Detroit, Memphis, and Philadelphia. In monopoly terms, the entire U.S. economy drained into a black hole of defaulted loans on Baltic and Mediterranean avenues. So how come you haven't heard this before? Maybe because you don't spend enough time watching Fox News or listening to GOP talk radio. In those precincts, the real cause of the national and world financial debacle turns out to be an obscure 1977 law known as the Community Reinvestment Act, or CRA. Intended to end the practice of redlining, i.e. refusing to make creditworthy loans in bad neighborhoods, the CRA was enacted under President Carter. To conservative pundits such as Charles Krauthammer, Jeff Jacoby, and Laura Ingraham, that's where all the trouble started. Supposedly, left-wing activists intimidated bankers into making risky loans to improvident minorities, which caused the whole debacle. Supposedly, too, President Clinton made things worse by revising the rules back in 1995. Leave it to Ann Coulter to spell things out most clearly. Thanks to Democratic Party interference with free markets, see, sound methods of appraising mortgage applicants' ability to repay loans were replaced by non-traditional measures of creditworthiness, such as having a good jump shot or having a missing child named Kaylee. As a result, she recently wrote, middle-class taxpayers are going to be forced to bail out the Democrats' two most important constituent groups, rich Wall Street bankers and welfare recipients. The brutality of this argument is matched only by its stupidity. An alert child would wonder why a 31-year-old law suddenly started causing trouble in 2008. Wouldn't a lot of those loans already be paid off? Wouldn't the same apply to actions that Clinton supposedly took 13 years ago? Besides, with Republicans controlling the government for the past 8 years, how come they didn't fix it? Mainly because it's utter nonsense. Community Reinvestment Act regulations apply only to FDIC-insured banks, not the mortgage companies and investment banks, which made 83.4% of subprime loans responsible for this crisis. The 1977 law also has nothing whatsoever to do with fraudulent packages of so-called securitized mortgage debt taking down investors worldwide. Those are a Bush-era innovation. Rick Perlstein, author of the brilliant history Nixonland, calls this ugly fable a modern equivalent of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, a big lie narrative that blames a despised, outcast social group for problems they had nothing to do with. A naive person might imagine that these people would have some shame. Gene Lyons, columnist, freelancer, actually, for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, author, winner of the National Magazine Award, who lives in Little Rock. Thanks, Gene. And one last email. This is from Prairie 2, and then back to your phone calls. Prairie 2 writes, capitalism is just a pile of worthless paper. The problem is that the term capitalism has been attached to the concept that all money is created by debt. The capital the fat cats have been using doesn't exist, but rather is a kind of perverse tax system where they give you little pieces of paper that they did nothing to earn, and you give them your wealth. The problem is that since they didn't create anything but more paper, the only way they can earn more wealth is by printing more worthless paper. After a while, there is no more wealth to steal, and the huge pile of paper comes crashing down. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Let's see. When does the New York Stock Exchange open? Did you see it today? I watched the opening bell and the closing bell. And there stands, I don't know where they get these people. They stand there and applaud. What are they applauding? What is that? Are they applauding the bell going off? Are they applauding the scurrying hither and yon of the little green and orange and red and purple-coated traders on the floor? Are they applauding the fact that, once again, the sun is shining, capitalist America begins its damage, its terror, its murderous assault on everything humanistic? What the hell are they applauding? And then today, after a closing bell that showed a 678-point drop, they stood there and applauded up on that little balcony above the clock or whatever the hell it is. Who are those people? There's different groups up there every day. Are they tourists? Are they people chosen to come in for the photo op, for mainstream media, for what? And they applaud. And today, normally I just write that off as just garbage, nonsense, just jerkwater, stupidity, swamp, nut, you know, craziness. But today I found myself screaming at the television at 4 o'clock this afternoon. What the f*** are you doing? What are you people yet clapping about? You're acting like Pavlov's dogs. The bell goes off and you clap. I was able to do that because Molly was at her little dance class. Oh, my God. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow, then? I started to say before I interrupted myself. At 9:30, when the bell goes off and they have another clutch of brain-dead morons standing there. Above the clock and the thing, standing up there in the balcony, looking over the trading floor, the butcher floor. There they stand. They think they're at the stock exchange. They're standing in an abattoir. They're standing in a slaughterhouse. And even on days when the stock market advances 400 points, people are being butchered in order for that to occur. And when the stock market falls 700 points, people are being butchered in order for that to occur. And the sons of bitches stand there and keep applauding. What the hell is going on?
Moratorium of rights. What did they think the politics of panic would invite?
Ten before the hour. The problem is sometimes I get my tongue in front of my eye teeth and I can't see what I'm saying. Ayn Rand. My pronunciation monitor sent me an email and said, "You said Ayn Rand. It's Ayn Rand." And this is the second or third time she's corrected me. You know, I read The Fountainhead. I read Atlas Shrugged. I hated both. I hated what was the architect's name, Kathy? Oh my God. Okay, never mind. Don't send it to me. But I didn't like either novel. It was maybe because I was too young. Although I don't think I'd like it now. Either one of them. I know she wrote much more than that, but those are the two that we were supposed to read in high school, for God's sake. Anyway, thanks for hanging out tonight. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Kathy Bay. And also, if you're not a Nova M founding member, I'm going to ask you to become one. Go to novamradio.com and check out how to do that. There are all sorts of free downloads and podcasts when you want them without all the commercials. There's stuff available, both Randy Rhodes stuff and stuff from Malloy. And also, I didn't do one last week, obviously, because we were not here, but we do this more or less weekly Malloy uncensored mailbag thing where I take some of the emails that come in and just read them as they're written. And some of them are pretty horrible. But it makes for great comedy, and those are only available to subscribers. So anyway, it's $10 a month or $100 a year, and if you are so inclined, sign up, join, be part of the Nova M family, okay? Okay. Back to your calls. Larry is calling from Green Bay, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Larry.
I'm just, first of all, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm just been a little bit cynical to this Obama, acorn business. And I just want to entertain the option that maybe there is something to this.
Well, first of all, what is the Obama acorn business?
Well, the voter registration fraud with the acorn and him being linked to this.
All right, now how is he linked? And what does he have to do with voter registration?
Well,
I'll tell you what. Here's what I suggest you do, Larry. Go research the story. Because right from the get-go, I think it's pretty clear that you don't know what you're talking about. And I don't mean that like, you don't know what you're talking about. I just mean you don't know what you're talking about. Barack Obama, when he was a community organizer in Chicago at one point, it's my understanding he did legal work for an umbrella organization that was comprised of a whole bunch of activist organizations. Among them was ACORN, the neighborhood activist organization that has worked for rent stabilization, all sorts of things. Now, the voter thing you're talking about, apparently some more diligent and misguided members of ACORN in where? Is it Nevada? I'm not sure, because the story really doesn't interest me. It is a Republican construct. I'm not saying it didn't happen. Of course it happened. And some of these people apparently, or I shouldn't say of course, apparently have been charged with registering people to vote, the people that didn't exist, or signing their names, or making stuff up. Okay, off with their goddamn heads. Kill them. Put them up against the wall. Shoot them. Give them a cigarette and put a bullet in their goddamn heads. All right? You know, I get sick of these Republican-inspired, oh, look at the scandal we found. Oh, son of a... These thugs in the GOP have stolen two presidential elections. God only knows, or Diebold, and in where concerns elections, there's no difference. How many congressional elections, how many mayoral elections, how many dog catcher elections they've stolen? Larry, here's the bottom line. I don't give a rat's ass about the Obama acorn story, as you put it. I couldn't care less. It is nothing but another one of these Republican, oh, look at this scandal. Jesus Christ, don't vote for him. The Muslim. No, Larry, sorry. I don't mean to jump down your throat, but I'm as interested in that story as I'm interested in developing throat cancer. Okay? But truly, go research the story so that if you call another talk radio program where the host may want to engage you in that story, you'll know what you're talking about. You can't just take two words, Obama, acorn, And add a couple more. Voter registration things, scandal, whatever. And expect to get anything from me other than screaming incoherent nonsense. All right? Because that's how I hear you, is giving me just incoherent nonsense. No offense, though. You're an American just like I am, and 90% of what we experience on a day-to-day basis in terms of information is either useless or bat squeeze. So, no offense, Larry. We out of time? Yeah, we're out of time. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it. So come back tomorrow, okay? And see what we've got tomorrow. In the meantime, take care. Seriously, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.